I mean, it's also interesting having conversations with couples. Sometimes I ask them questions that they haven't asked each other, you know, which could be good or bad. But yeah, it's like, you know, some of the topics related to children or parents bring up, you know, major differences.
The heart of advice. It's personal. It's pragmatic. Here on the eMoney Heart of Advice podcast, we explore how to navigate both sides to help you take your financial planning practice to the next level. Join us as we speak with financial professionals to learn how they deepen relationships and improve client outcomes. This podcast contains purely educational information, and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor or any of its affiliates or subsidiaries.
I'm Connor Sung.
And I'm Sasha Gramsitter. We're your eMoney experts. Today on the podcast, we have Chloe Moore. So Chloe Moore is a certified financial planner. Yay! Founder and principal of Financial Staples, a virtual fee-only financial planning firm located in Atlanta, Georgia. And she's also the co-founder of the BLX internship, helping next-gen Black and Latinx financial planners find meaningful paid summer internships. Chloe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course.
You're welcome, Chloe. It's great to have you. Before we dive into all of the other stuff about the firm and about BLX, we'd love to hear a little bit more about you. In particular, you know, what inspired you to start your firm, kind of the client niche, what led to you to where you are today?
Yeah, so it's funny. I never thought of myself as someone who would start my own business or have my own financial planning firm. I just always thought I'd be an employee working at a financial planning firm. But I started it out of necessity, really. I felt it was the only way I could have control over my career path and my success in this profession. And so just to give you a little brief overview, I've been in the industry for 20 years now, which is crazy to think about. So I started working like the first 10 years of my career. I worked at a few different financial planning firms. I just had a lot of obstacles. Every firm that I worked for, I was the only Black female financial planner. And so there were just a lot of, you know, struggles that came with that. And also just being a young planner coming out of college. And so I just never really saw a way to grow and succeed in the industry after working for 10 years. And so that's what really led me to start my firm. And so I actually wrote an article about, you know, my experiences over that time and published it on LinkedIn. And it was later published in Wealth Management magazine.
And as you started your firm, how did you end up with the specific client niche? And I know that you've talked about the success that you've had by really like narrowing in the focus, but can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So initially I started my firm with the intent of serving just high income or high earning young professionals. Some people call them Henrys. And so I joined XY Planning Network and started my firm, you know, just to work with kind of Gen X and Gen Y clients. So I ended up transitioning to tech employees because my very first clients were all in tech. And so I really saw that as a way to kind of use the skill sets that I learned working with corporate executives who had equity compensation, and kind of transferring that into working with young professionals that, you know, worked in tech and they were receiving very generous amounts of equity, you know, RSU stock options, and didn't really know, you know, what these things meant or how to manage these things. And so in addition to managing their high incomes, so just from that, I started to just attract more and more tech employees and decided to really switch my marketing from being a little bit more generic to being specifically for tech employees. And then I also started naturally attracting people from underserved populations. So a lot of women, people of color, LGBTQ folks in tech. And so, you know, I also wanted to continue, you know, marketing that way as well. So a lot of my clients are kind of the first in their family to graduate from college or earn this much money. And I'm the first financial professional that they've worked with. So yeah, it's been a cool journey.
We really like that you focus on that niche. And so I really have another kind of like follow-up question. Do you believe that like focusing your practice, like the area that you have, enhances your ability to meet your clients' needs more effectively? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I really do. My clients kind of have, you know, these unusually high salaries, especially for their age. So I work with people anywhere from like late 20s to late 40s, typically. So in addition to just high, you know, base salaries, a lot of them have cash bonuses and equity. So that gives them like an ability to accelerate, you know, their goals, and also just reach, you know, goals that they never even thought were possible before. So, so yeah, just by being able to focus on, you know, that specific area between, you know, the equity and salaries, they're able to, I'm able to help them with a lot of those different goals. And then I also, you know, just with, like I said, the populations that I serve, and the things that they have in common with kind of being that first generation of, you know, people who could build wealth like in their families. I've learned a lot, you know, just about how to really tap into who they are on a personal level. I believe that, you know, learning more about who they are, what's important to them, their money history and their, you know, kind of things that they've experienced growing up. You know, that has a huge impact on how they manage their finances now. One of the things that, you know, is also important is just learning, like getting to know my clients on a personal level. And so, you know, just learning about their money history, you know, just their experiences growing up, how they saw their parents manage money, some of the things that they've, you know, had to experience through their early adulthood. And so all of those things, you know, really combined with my technical skill set can help give them the best chance of achieving their goals. And it really just, you know, creates a deep personalized relationship between me and the clients.
Well, I mean, speaking of personalized relationships, I'm just going to ask you the next question, because we do have research by eMoney that highlights that personalization in the financial planning process, and that it definitely gives that enhanced client value. So what was that factor in focusing the scope of your practice? You know, I think you said originally you started working with tech individuals. So to provide that with your practice, like how do you provide a deeper level of personalization? And tell us a little bit how you tailored that experience for them.
Yeah. And so when I start with clients, one of the very first things I do is just have what I call a discovery meeting. So we talk a lot in detail just about, you know, their money history, their goals, their values, you know, just kind of how they feel that they've managed money so far. And, you know, are there big regrets that they have or mistakes they feel like they've made? Are there things that they're proud of or things that they feel like they've yet to accomplish? So all of those things, you know, are really important to kind of personalizing the advice that I give them. You know, some people might have, you know, kind of more non-traditional goals, or they might have some things that they want to accomplish that, you know, I guess traditional advice would tell us are not the right order to do things. And so, or are not things that we should focus on, or not the smartest decision financially, but it might make them feel better, you know, just emotionally, or make them, you know, be able to sleep at night. And so just kind of understanding all of those things can really help me personalize the advice that I give to my clients.
I love that you really dive deep with your clients. I think that tells a lot about who you are as a person, but also how you want to get to know them. So, I'll ask more about that later, but I'll let Connor chime in.
There is the stigma that most tech employees work somewhere on the West Coast, especially like the Silicon Valleys and other areas like that. We didn't touch on yet, but your practice is virtual. Can you talk a little bit about the decision to go virtual, as well as just how it goes?
Yeah, it's interesting. I know a lot of people became virtual like during COVID, but I've been virtual since day one. And so early in my business, I did meet with a handful of local clients in person, but it was just on occasion. It wasn't a regular thing. And so the way that I've set things up is I wanted to be able to access, you know, clients all over the country, as long as they kind of fell into, you know, my target market and my niche. I didn't want to be bound by, you know, location or where I am. And so I do have, you know, large majority of my clients because are in Georgia, just because, you know, people tend to search for someone who's near them. But I do have clients, you know, in multiple different states all across the country. And so so what I do as far as how I set things up is I use scheduling software just for prospect and client meetings. So I use OnceHub, which was used to be known as Schedule Once. And then my meeting cadences are kind of structured for the most part. So I have, you know, set meeting times or throughout the year that I meet with clients. And then often end up scheduling the next meeting during the current meeting. But if I don't, you know, they have access to schedule online. And then all the meetings are kind of held on Zoom. And then I use eMoney. So I use the client website a lot, rely heavily on that just to get updates on, you know, the client balances and like their transactions, the cash flow, you know, which are big things that we focus on throughout the year, and just managing their cash flow, make sure they're on track with their savings goals, investment goals, things like that. So we rely on email too heavily. So I send recaps after each meeting through email with action items. And, you know, clients also can reach out to me at any time, you know, through email, and we can schedule additional meetings if they come up. So we have a pretty structured approach with meeting clients and doing that on a virtual basis.
That's great. And yeah, I totally agree that there has, even if firms or teams or advisors haven't completely made the shift to being virtual first, it's basically a table stakes now to be able to host virtual meetings. You talked about calendar scheduling, you talked about financial planning tools, about Zoom and hosting the meeting somewhere, as well as your custom written notes as a follow-up. If you had to give one best practice around hosting virtual meetings, regardless of where that falls, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the biggest thing is just having some structure, so the clients are kind of accustomed to having, you know, good system and structure in place, so they know, you know, when is their next meeting going to happen, or how often are you meeting with them throughout the year, what are the touch points, and having, you know, open access so that clients can reach out if they have questions or if something comes up.
That's great. Yeah, and I know that the younger tech group tends to be a little bit more needy as far as their time goes. I do want to circle back to kind of your, hey, I belong in that group. So I feel like I feel like it's that section, like the Henry client, is where most traditional wealth planning firms are trying to get to. Like they're trying to, you know, like decrease the age of their overall book. They're trying to find some of these newer, like maybe don't have a ton of assets yet. And as we start to talk about different subscription models or fee-based planning and movement away from the typical AUM model, I am curious, like, we talked a little bit about you changing your advertising to target that niche. But as you think about this intersection of the personalities or the general personality of who you're trying to target, plus your level of personalization that you go to and the depth and detail of the financial plans, can you just talk a little bit about what that shift in your marketing actually looked like?
Yeah, absolutely. So there were a combination of things. So one of the things I did was, you know, updated my website to make sure that I was kind of explaining more of who I work with, giving examples of what those clients look like. So I had, you know, examples of, you know, single woman in tech, or like a tech couple, or, you know, just different people that were dealing with different situations, whether it was a private company that was pre-IPO or a public company. And so I had case studies on my website. I had just some examples of the types of clients that I typically, you know, work with or I work best with. I also, as far as marketing, there's a couple of different approaches there. I write for different publications, so I'm just, you know, trying to get my name out through some of that writing. I've done speaking, so I've spoken at actual tech conferences or in front of tech organizations. So there's some women in tech organizations that I've done, you know, webinars for virtually, or spoken in person to different groups as well. And then also, I think a big factor was joining a couple of different Facebook groups for tech employees, women in tech. And so, you know, sometimes they'll ask questions. A lot of them are technical, or, you know, maybe finding jobs or different things like that. But on occasion, you know, there might be some financial questions. Hey, I have these, I have this ESPP plan. Like, what, you know, how do I think about this? Or I got a big bonus. Like, how, you know, what should I do? Or, you know, does anyone have a financial planner? Or, you know, just asking tax questions, you know, during tax season, I have a huge tax bill. Like, how did this happen? Like, how can I manage to, you know, not have this bill next year? So, yeah, just as those questions come up, I'll go through and answer questions. A lot of my clients, you know, join those groups and are part of the groups already. And so they'll, you know, vouch for me or recommend me. So, so that's how I grew a lot of my client base.
That's great. You did mention something that I wanted to come into a little bit further as well. But so I would say your niche market is more detail oriented, or can be more engineering related. I think that combination of the age plus the demographic plus the industry, and that they are making a decent amount of money. What challenges come along with that type of client and their planning needs? You talked a lot about some of the point in time and help that you've helped with, you know, the ESPP or tax bills or whatever it is. But if you could just talk a little bit about that demo and some of the challenges and opportunities that you've seen working with them.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest challenge that I have with clients is, you know, like I said, a lot of times I'm the first financial professional that they've ever worked with. So just, you know, kind of understanding, like educating them how we can best work together and how we can work as a team. And, you know, they can rely on me to, you know, anytime they're making big financial decisions and they don't have to do those things on their own, they can have a thinking partner to, you know, kind of run ideas by, you know, by someone and really think through things and make educated and informed decisions. Another piece of it is, you know, because a lot of my clients are first generation, they didn't really grow up in a household where they talked about money. So I do a lot of education, and I mean, even down to the basics. And one of the first things that we do after the discovery meeting is just looking to see, you know, where does your money go and how are you currently managing your cash flow, and helping clients create a system for, you know, managing money as it comes in and making sure, you know, how much are you actually setting aside for savings? Like, do you have have you thought about, you know, what a proper emergency fund looks like, or different short-term goals that you want to save for? How much should you be investing for retirement or long-term financial freedom? And just, you know, how do we create those systems so that money automatically goes in those different buckets? And we reassess as things come up. And then, or if you're having, you know, certain quarterly vesting schedules where you're, you know, receiving stock, how do we think about that ahead of time and plan out for the year to say, you know, you're going to get this bonus at this time, you're going to get this stock during this time, and kind of have a plan ahead of time for how we're going to manage those buckets of money. So really, you know, just kind of digging deep into those different pieces and providing a lot of education.
That provides a lot of care though, as well, you know, like that ability to have those conversations around budgeting and really figuring out, okay, when do we do this and when do we do this next? So I think that probably your clients love that level of interaction.
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of advisors might overlook. And you know, they think, oh, well, if someone's coming to me, they should already have that part figured out. But I mean, that's a really big part of their life, is, you know, kind of receiving this money on a regular basis. And so even if we do talk ahead and have a plan ahead of time, sometimes they still want, you know, the handholding. Or if we talked about, okay, we're going to get this stock in at this month and you need to sell it, sometimes they still want to get in on a meeting and say, hey, can we get on Zoom together for 15 minutes and can you watch me sell this stock to make sure I do it right?
So, yeah. Am I clicking the right buttons?
Yeah. Selling the right stock too.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. So earlier you spoke a lot about like your initial client meetings at Discovery, asking really deep questions about your client's life and really getting to know them. So I just want to know, like, how vital is it for you in that first meeting when building with your client planner relationships? We want to know what that's like.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important to get to know the client before you provide any advice. And one of the big things that I say to clients is, I don't believe my job is to tell them exactly what to do with their money. It's my job to serve as a guide. So, you know, I can educate them on different financial planning topics so they can make more informed decisions. And we can also kind of explore different possibilities together. And so because, you know, I do this for a living and I think about things that maybe are not even on their radar, I can talk about potential downsides. Like if they, for example, like want to buy a house, like let's talk through, How much can you actually afford? Like, what do the numbers look like? What are your expenses going to be outside of just the principal and interest of your mortgage? You know, are you going to have property taxes, insurance, HOA fees if you're in a condo or a townhouse? What is the maintenance going to look like the total cost of homeownership that maybe they're not thinking about? How can we, you know, go through all of those things and compare that to your current situation? So just digging deep into some of those decisions and looking at, you know, various outcomes, and from there they can make an informed decision, you know, whichever direction they feel is best, you know, kind of knowing all the information. But yeah, and I think also just digging deep into who they are, it allows me to eliminate judgment and really meet them where they are. So, you know, there are clients that maybe have personal goals. You know, like I said, just some of the things that maybe are not traditional or not things that, you know, advisors would encourage them to do, such as, you know, it could be like tithing or helping their parents, you know, in retirement or helping family members, or just reaching, you know, goals outside of what, you know, typical financial advice tells you to do. So I can approach that with, you know, knowing what's important to them and making sure that I'm not, you know, judging them, but I'm really helping them make good decisions.
That level of alignment, I think, is, I want to just double down on, this personal experience. I went through a values card exercise, and I think like the very next day I was trying to decide whether I should get a pair of shoes or something like that. And it didn't align with like my five value cards that were that were left at the very end of the exercise. And, you know, on a much grander scale, aligning towards family or, you know, financial goals or personal life, I feel like it is, I say it all the time, so I don't mean it in any sort of negative way, but meeting people where they are is, it has so many meanings, I think, but it is so very important to align both things together to actually drive towards some of the motivation and mostly confidence, satisfaction with you, with their plan, with their financial life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're talking about discovery, and I just want to ask, is there any memorable discovery meetings that you've had with the client that you can kind of share that like aha moment, especially because you're discussing like, you know, like their goals might be different from what's traditional. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. So I think with clients, the biggest aha, it's just when we talk about early money memories. And so they might, you know, talk about how they saw their parents managing money growing up, and, you know, making that connection with how they manage money now. So, you know, if they like have parents who are divorced, you know, maybe, and they had a single mom who worked really hard, and, you know, and so, you know, there's good and bad things about that. You know, maybe she wasn't around as much, or she was always, you know, busy trying to provide. And so they, you know, have that work ethic as well. And so they're, you know, also working very hard. I have some clients who maybe their mom was the breadwinner, the mom, you know, managed the finances. And so they end up being female breadwinners and marrying, you know, someone who maybe makes significantly less than them. And so, you know, just some of those different things or dynamics that, you know, maybe clients have with couples that they saw kind of mirrored in their relationships with their parents, you know, could be a big aha moment, or just how they, you know, think about money. And it's also interesting having conversations with couples. Sometimes I ask them questions that they haven't asked each other. You know, which could be good or bad, but yeah, it's like, you know, some of the topics related to children or parents bring up, you know, major differences. I had a couple one time, and the wife was, you know, just from a different country, and so it was super important to her to make sure to take care of her parents, and you know, the husband was from the U.S. and so, you know, she was just saying, she mentioned, you know, during our conversation that she's like, you know, even if we have to struggle, like, we're taking care of my parents. And the husband was like, whoa, like, I didn't. So, you know, that kind of created a big conversation. And then, you know, even with clients that talk about, you know, children, I mean, maybe, you know, one of the spouses is saying, I don't care if my kid wants to go to a private school out of state, you know, we're going to pay for it. And, you know, the other spouse is like, no, we're paying for public in state. If it's anything extra, they have to cover the difference. So just having some of those conversations helps them get on the same page, and then we can all create a plan that works for everyone.
I think
what you do is really fabulous to really get to know that client and really focus on those moments that kind of need to come out. But I'm curious because I feel like asking those money script questions, those money history questions can be kind of vulnerable. I would just want to know, like, what do those questions sound like when you ask those to the clients?
Yeah. So my very first question is very open-ended. It's just, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you grew up. So I want to know, you know, just where did they grow up? Do they have siblings? Like, were their parents together? You know, or did they get divorced when they were younger? So just all of those things are just, you know, important just to know kind of the basics of who they are and where they come from. Then I talk about early memories of money. Like, do they have any, you know, experiences or things that really stick out? How do they define success in their life? It could be financial or personal, professional. Are there financial choices they made that they feel really good about or that they regret? And talking into more detail about that. And what does retirement look like to you? Or is that something that you even have considered? How do you find balance in your life? Do you feel like you have a good balance between, you know, work and life and or family or other obligations or, you know, hobbies or things that you want to pursue? Charitable giving, is that something that's important to you? What does retirement look like? All of those things are just kind of questions that I try to ask to learn more about them and who they are.
My brain is thinking about FinSight questions, like financial psychology questions, and really building that client planner relationship, because that's really what financial psychology is about, is like the psychology between the client and the planner, as we learned from Dr. Luter a few episodes ago. But I think that those are beautiful questions that you can ask to just kind of understand who your client is. So thank you for sharing those.
Yeah.
I think that I just want to echo Sasha. I think the level of depth of relationship that you're building is kind of, it's drastically meaningful. And I think that ultimately the confidence and just confidence is the only word that's coming to mind right now, that you're delivering just building a relationship and understanding where people are aligned towards it's awesome. And as I think about all of the people listening to this, as well as others, you're somebody that is incredibly generous with your time. Deep diving with your clients is one piece of that. But I think another thing, which, you know, very philanthropic, altruistic in nature, is all of the stuff that you've done in hopes for the next generation of advisors. And in particular, you know, I'm heading towards the BLX internship. But can you just start with telling the audience a little bit about the BLX internship?
Yeah, absolutely. So with the BLX internship, I was co-founded by me and three other advisors. So really our goal was to provide an entry point into the profession for aspiring Black and Latinx financial planners. And so we do that through paid internships. Just thinking through our journeys getting into the industry, it was, you know, it wasn't very easy, as I told you in the beginning. And then also just, I remember in college, I majored in financial planning, went to a, you know, CFP board certified program, and I did an unpaid internship. And so as someone who, you know, had to pay her way through college, that was something that, you know, I didn't really have any options. There weren't paid internships available. So I had to do this unpaid internship, actually drive to a different city, almost an hour away to do it, and wait tables, like at nights and on the weekends to really pay my bills while I was getting this experience that was required for my degree. So, I thought about that as just being a big barrier for, you know, like unpaid internships really help people who have, you know, the privilege of having the financial resources to do that. And also just the different areas that you can enter into our profession. When you enter into like a sales environment, you know, a lot of times people who don't have, you know, big networks of people that they can sell products to, they end up failing out of the industry, or they don't get the support they need to really stay in the industry. So all of those things, you know, we kind of really thought about it and wanted to provide that opportunity for people to get into our great industry. And so we're not just an internship program. For firms, we effectively serve as like a full service recruiter. So we look to help firms hire qualified, diverse talent. So, you know, whether they're looking for interns or even, you know, just people who are early in their careers, you know, our interns who've maybe gone through the program and are looking for their first job now because they're graduating, or career changers that are looking to transition into the industry. We provide a lot of those, you know, resources for firms that want to build that talent pipeline. And then on the intern side, we provide career development resources, education scholarships. We do a lot of personalized coaching. We have conferences that they can attend and volunteer in to get experience. We had a couple of interns who attended Shift. And so recently, yeah, just kind of a combination of all those things are really helping us to bring that next generation of planners into the profession.
Yeah, it's been great. I think that total package of obviously helping the interns and then helping place the interns, and it definitely does correlate to a lot of value in the firms that you're working with, because they are getting extremely qualified people with more hands-on experience than I think many do coming directly out of a registered program. How can other advisors or other firms get more involved with BLX?
Yeah, absolutely. So applications over summer of 2025 are going to open in the fall. We encourage firms that are interested to reach out to us in the meantime. You know, before applications start, we'll have a series of webinars in the fall. And then also, if you're looking for, we started, you know, kind of during COVID, so there were a lot of virtual internships, and we encourage that, you know, especially to have access to a wider pool of talent. But if you're looking for, if you're a firm that's looking for like an in-person intern, definitely contact us now so that we can start, you know, sourcing those candidates. We do a lot of our recruiting and outreach to the universities in kind of August, September timeframe when school starts. So we can definitely target for certain areas if firms are looking for, you know, talent that's in person. You know, join our email list to get updates on the program. You can go to our website, which is blxinternship.org. You can email us at info@blxinternship.org and schedule a meeting to just talk about your needs and see how we can help.
I think that's truly beautiful, because my husband's previous firm, they actually hired a BLX intern, and then he got his had the internship over the summer, and then and got hired on for his job. So it was like a lovely, it was a really great story actually. To hear and know that. And earlier I made a little like note about, you know, like being in the industry, coming in and having that unpaid internship. I just resonated with everything you said, and just want to say that, because I feel like a little like snarky comment, but I was just mostly me being like, yep, I totally understand. I went through that process, tried to sell insurance, and completely failed out of it. So
yeah.
But one thing I just want to like focus on is, how have your experience with the BLX interns and other leaders in this organization influenced how you see the future of the industry and how it's really evolving?
Yeah, I'd say just the interns themselves like keep us, you know, motivated to continue with the program. We've seen a huge impact on their lives. People who, you know, had opportunities to get full-time positions that we, you know, maybe never thought that they could get into the industry or break into it, or career changers that have been trying to get their first job for several years and, you know, are finally able to get connections to firms that are looking to hire. So just, yeah, that's something that's huge to help keep us motivated. And yeah, hearing the success stories, like what you just told me about, just people who are able to work in firms, and, you know, we have some former interns that have been at firms for several years now and are just getting their first promotions. But yeah, it's just been amazing to see that support, you know, just from the firms that are participating in the program, and also just from the advisor community as a whole. You know, we're a nonprofit, so just the, you know, corporate sponsorships that we've received, people who are wanting to support us, you know, financially or give us resources to help the intern and the interns, colleagues who, you know, have made individual donations to our organizations, conference organizers who, you know, welcomed our interns to volunteer and come to the conferences. So that's just been, you know, the big support has been very helpful.
It's helpful for the students too, that builds their confidence and that they want to be in this industry when they have support from others.
Yeah.
It is all, I think, selfishly, as eMoney is a sponsor of BLX and has been for the past few years, seeing some of those success stories passed on, like it's very heartwarming and kind of gratifying, even from just a sponsor of the program.
Yeah. Yeah. And we definitely appreciate, you know, the support from eMoney and our interns have had the opportunity to get the eMoney certification as part of the program as well. So it's been super helpful and great resume builder for them.
Yeah. We hope so. Well, just to wrap us up, I want to ask you our final question, which we ask all of our guests, which is, how would you define the heart of advice when it comes to financial planning?
Yeah, to me, the heart of advice is really helping clients truly discover who they are and what they value. I think a lot of times, you know, people just kind of, you know, we have a tendency to float through life, you know, and just really kind of accept what's happening to us instead of really taking charge and understanding, okay, you know, outside of what social media or friends or family, you know, tells us what's important. Like, I want to discover who I truly am and what's important to me. And so just being able to work with clients to help them on that, you know, path to discovery, you know, helps them make better life decisions, including decisions with their money. But, you know, even outside of that, just personal decisions with their career or their relationships. So I think that's really the heart of advice.
Thank you. And I think I've heard you say before that your net worth does not equal your self-worth. And I think that you surmised it very well in that statement. But thank you so much for your time, Chloe. We really appreciated having you and sharing all of your experience and your insights. You are a wonderful advisor and doing great things to help advance the industry and everyone.
Thank you so much.
The Heart of Advice podcast is produced by eMoney Advisor, a leading provider of technology solutions and services that help people talk about money. Learn more at eMoneyAdvisor.com, where you can find additional resources for advisor success, including the Heart of Advice blog, as well as eBooks, CE webinars, and events.